This is Robin Farmer for this edition of the Writer's Voice for Virginia Voice. And today I welcome Joanna Suzanne Lee, an extraordinary poet. Welcome, Joanna.
Thanks, Robin. It's great to be here.
Joanna earned her MD from the Medical College of Virginia in 2007 and her Master's in Applied Science from William & Mary in 2010. Her poetry has been published in a number of online and print journals, including Rattle, Floodwall, Right Hand Pointing, The Poetry in Contemporary American Voices, and has been nominated for both Best of the Net and Pushcart Prizes. Dissections, her first chapbook, is forthcoming from Finishing Line Press this summer, and All In, her first stage play, co-written with fellow Richmonder Mark Covington, will be performed at Firehouse Theater April 17th. Joanna is a founder of the River City Poets Community and is currently serving as board chair of the James River Writers. We have a lot to talk about, but let's start with your background. You've never studied writing formally, but you did study medicine. Where do you find your intersection between poetry and your medical training?
Writing was always something that was very natural to me. And when I went to study first chemistry in college and then medicine, it was because it was a challenge. It was the first thing that was really, really difficult for me, and I wanted to be challenged. And I did enjoy medicine. I did enjoy working with patients. And I went from medical school directly to graduate school to do clinical research. I still wasn't really sure what I was going to do ultimately, but about halfway through my training in neuroscience, applied science at William & Mary, my mother passed away, and it just completely turned my life upside down. So a lot of people ask me, so how did you get back to the writing? And it was just a very natural thing. As part of my grieving, as part of who I was, I went back and I just picked up the pen, and that was my process. As time went by after my mom's death, going back to school didn't feel right. So I just continued to write. I became more involved in the community here in Richmond as far as reading what I wrote, doing workshops, doing critiques, really forming a community. And I've found that the intersection for me of my creative life and the healing process, those two things, they connect in more ways than people really think about. Writing or any kind of art, any kind of creative art, can be an integral part of the whole healing process, whether we're talking psychologically, whether we're talking actually physically. I've worked with vets at McGuire dealing with PTSD, dealing with all kinds of, you know, stress injuries and physical injuries from combat. I've worked with Richmond Behavioral Health Authority for patients with traumatic brain injury. And for them, the writing, the getting it down on paper of all the things they've experienced is just, it can be transformative. And so that's the intersection for me.
After your mom passed, you turned to writing for healing. Was that the first time in your life you did that? Or did you have this affinity for poetry long before that?
Oh, long before that, definitely. I think I was writing poetry since I could actually write. I mean, I remember writing silly little rhyming poems when I was 6, 7 years old, and all through grade school and middle school. And it wasn't until I got to high school when I became too cool for poetry that I sort of left it behind and worked more towards the sciences. It was natural for me to come back to that when I had periods of stress in my life in college and graduate school and further on. I just came back to it. It was like coming home. Writing is coming home.
I've seen you read poetry, and what astounds me is there is a physical transformation. You become not someone else. Obviously, you're still yourself, but it's just so empowering and beautiful to see that. Talk about how you change when you read.
The first thing I want to say is that that's not something that's always been the case. When I wrote as a kid, and even in high school and college, when I first started putting poems out there in the world to be published, I was terrified of reading aloud. I was terrified of speaking in public at all. I mean, I would be in tears if I had to give a book report. And the thing that has changed that is that over time, after having done it and becoming more used to the experience and realizing that when I read what I write aloud, it gives me a unique, one-of-a-kind experience to connect with the reader, or listener in this case. So it's not something that can be duplicated no matter where it's published, no matter you know, if it's recorded, but connecting and seeing the audience in front of me and having them respond to my words, it's something that's amazing. And it's, I don't know that you can duplicate that in a whole lot of other fields.
What will you read for us today?
I'd like to read a couple short poems that are actually going to be in Dissections, the forthcoming chapbook, and finish with one short one from Somersaults, which was a book I published a long time ago. But interestingly, I was going through poems and I found this one, and the first line is 2 days after Palm Sunday, which I realized is today. So I figured it was probably meant to be that I finished with that one. The first poem is titled Cingarella, which is a Romani or Gypsy word. It came from a song. It was the title of a song that I heard a local klezmer band play here in Richmond. And it means sort of like pretty girl or princess, or it's a sort of a term of endearment. And that was the inspiration behind the poem. So it's called Cingarella, If I Really Were a Princess. I'd write our song to gypsy music in dark bars on late weeknights. The wail of clarinets and accordions wielded by skinny-legged musicians vibrating through the cheap plastic seat and up into my bones. We'd sit picking the scabs of the past with oily fingertips thinking, there is resonance here somewhere, the candle-lit south-pawed slant of scrawl running parallel to words I wouldn't understand. Like when you said, some things have to change. Like when the lead singer called her a heartbreaker, and I remember I said, break is really not the right word. Hearts aren't like porcelain. They're all muscle and mallow, and if I were to pluck yours out of its wet cavity and throw it, beating on the empty dance floor, it might even bounce.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
And these next two are very of the season for me. I tend to write seasonally as far as the inspiration, the images. So this first one is called Spring at Dad's. The new green does nothing to tame them. Plane after plane, engines over, a litany of small-town boys who never graduated to the Learjets of their day school dreams. We spend the time sifting the leaf fall of years from a hard, warm earth, clearing the way for the grass my mother wanted so badly. All her wheelbarrows of dirt, all her fingernails an unshakable cough of dirt. The irises in the canopy beds begin to lift their heads and shrug off sleep. Easter lilies already slumping to ground. The falling pollen catches like powdered sugar on the down of my forearms, like the dust on her jewel box, like the days from that May morning when she left breath behind and we woke up yet a part of the flight path. This next poem is called We Try to Keep the Doors Shut. Fleeting as the dust left on palms after the gentle crush of a moth against the cream canvas of walls stained yellow with lifetimes of nicotine, nothing as fragile as a poem will ever bear the weight of my father's eyes. Hardest to see is how he slows, resigned, and I wonder if loneliness is something inherited. Something bred among the wild-flowered fields and splattered animal byways of my youth and his youth, among the mists of red June mornings starred with Queen Anne's lace, the blue-shadowed valleys growing green with the blood of so many young lifetimes, and why After a night of quiet drinking and staring blankly at constellations we both wish we could name, there are not enough words to fill the space of leaving, and no medicine I will ever learn to bring back the limb missed since childhood. Father, this is the only healing I know.
Very nice. Love that line. There are not enough words to fill the space of leaving. Wow. Wow. Joanna, how often do you write your poetry?
Well, it depends on the time of year. Right now, we're in April, which is National Poetry Month, and I'm part of an online group that does a poem a day, as we have for the past several years. So I'm about caught up. I've been writing a poem a day for the past week. And other than that, at other times of the year, it's really sort of dropped off, I would say, significantly. I do have workshops and critiques where I try to have a piece to bring at least a couple times a month. So I would say 2 to 3 poems a month, maybe one that I'm happy with, actually, most months.
What is your writing process like? Do you revise and revise? How do you know a poem is ready?
I do believe, I forget who said this, but all poems are drafts until you're dead, right?
I never heard that before.
I mean, even Whitman and his Leaves of Grass, I mean, he was constantly revising even after it was published. I mean, there were so many versions of that book and the poems within it. Like, you're never happy completely. It's always an ongoing process. And so the best you can do is, you know, if you're happy with it after you write it, right, you're always happy with it right after you write it. And give it a day or two to rest. Just don't look at it for at least 24 hours and then come back. And if you still like it, then that's a good sign. And, you know, it might make it to the next round of edits. And really, I think a piece of that, so after you've done a couple iterations of that, of the letting it sit, working on it, letting it sit, working on it, to get another pair of eyes on it. And that's where it's really, really important to have a good critique group or some readers that you trust to give you feedback. And those other eyes are invaluable, just to hear how it sounds, because when you read it to yourself, it might not be how your readers are hearing it. Everyone's going to hear it a little differently. But if you have a specific meaning that you're trying to get across, then you really have to be specific with the way you break the lines, the way you lay out the verses, the sounds of the words, what rhymes, what doesn't rhyme, the assonance. All those things need to be just right so that the way you intend for it to be read is the way it's actually read on the page by someone who doesn't know what your original intentions were.
Right, right. That makes sense. Last year, I got the chance to meet Walter Mosley. He was at the University of Richmond. And during his fabulous presentation, he said something that I wrote down. And he said, "Poets can teach you everything you need to know about good writing." And I thought, whoa, what else can poetry teach you?
I think the most important thing that poetry teaches you, and I've actually had other people come to our critique groups who don't write poetry for this reason specifically, is that every word counts. You cannot afford to just go off on something or wax large on something that only needed a word or two or a phrase or a line. The space is critical. The conciseness is critical.
Brevity, yeah.
Yeah.
Vivid imagery and powerful nouns and verbs, right?
No word wasted in a poem. All kinds of prose writers have come, and songwriters we've had come to our groups who say the same thing. This makes me a better writer, just to come learn what is necessary, what is unnecessary, and so how to go forth being more precise and concise in what I write.
You are stretching yourself as a writer. Tell us about All In, your first stage play. What is it about, and how did it come about?
This was not an expected direction that anything I ever would have intended to go, and probably wouldn't have gone if I hadn't been invited by my co-writer to join into this project. All In is a dark drama. It's set in a mental hospital at Christmas time, and it has two female protagonists who are dealing with a number of issues One is post-suicidal. One has dealt with some abuse issues going on at home with her and her family. So it's a lot of dark stuff. If you've ever heard the play of Sunset Limited by Cormac McCarthy, that was sort of where we started as an inspiration and then took it a little left, as well as changing the protagonist from male to female, which brings up a whole nother, not only voice, but set of issues and concerns for those females. Like, what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of family? What is important to give my life value? I mean, it's a lot to tackle in a short hour and a half or whatever the span of the play is finally.
And you have something coming up, a reading or what?
Yes, it's going to be brought to life for the first time for a stage reading. So the actresses will have their scripts in hand, and it won't be a full run with props and scenes and all that. But there will be a sense of what should be the next step. Does the script still need some tweaking? Is it ready to go full production? Really a big night to determine where this play is going to go from here.
You are the chair of James River Writers. Talk about how the organization can help diverse writers at every stage.
James River Writers is amazing. I've been with the organization now since I moved back to Richmond 6 or 7 years ago, and it's good for wherever you are as a writer, or even if you just dabble in writing, or you think you might want to start writing, or you're an avid reader and you want to get to know more about the writing process, because it makes connections for you. It helps you make those connections. There are people there who are willing to help you and who have been where you are, wherever that is, you know, help hold your hand. They can be your cheering squad. They can introduce you to people who know what needs to happen next, whether it's in the publishing industry, the editing process. It's a great group of folks, network of folks. Again, we talked a little bit about community earlier with the critique groups. You can't do it as a writer alone. You really need that support network because writing is hard. Getting known as a writer is even harder. And it can be really daunting if you're on your own and you don't know who to turn to. You don't have someone you can lean on or ask for help. And the James River Writers can help you with all those things. Again, it doesn't matter what you're writing, if you're a poet, if you're a playwright, if you're a novelist, if you're writing nonfiction, it's great for, again, wherever you are, whatever you're writing, we can help.
You are also the founder of River City Poets. How long has this organization been around, and what do you all do?
River City Poets is a community, and some people have described it to me as the James River Writers for Poets. I started it with a handful of poets about 2011, I guess. 2010, we did our first reading, October. And it didn't set out to be a community. It didn't set out to be an organization at all. It started out as a handful of us. Shan Palmer was one, and myself. We just said, you know what? We're going to get together, and we're going to read our work, and people are going to come hear us, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. Well, no. That is not how it turned out. We set up our first reading at a gallery space downtown, and I guess it was October 2010, and I think three people came, one of whom was my brother, two of whom were friends of hers. We didn't know what we were doing. These things take time to grow and to get the word out, and we persisted. We persisted at it. We started with readings every other month. We moved to once a month, and then all of a sudden someone asked me to do poetry at another venue downtown. So all of a sudden we had two venues a month, and people were asking for feedback on their work, and I was getting all these emails, and I'm like, well, wouldn't it be great if we just started coming together once a month or once every other week and bringing our work and getting some feedback? And so we started with critique groups, and then we started with workshops. It just really happened organically. We have two or three reading events a month. We have open mics at Firehouse. We have a dedicated reading series in the spring and fall where we bring in poets from the Richmond area and elsewhere in Virginia to come read to the library. We do critiques twice a month. We do workshops once a month. It's just exciting to see the more people get involved and who want to be involved and want to share their work. And if I were to give us a mission statement, it would be that we want to give people the space and the confidence to share whatever it is that they have to say. Give them the space for their voice.
To learn more, is there a website?
Right now, we do not have a dedicated website. I've been using an events page as a subpage of my website to list our events by month. The same with Facebook. We do have a newsletter that comes out at the end of every month with the following month's events. And you can sign up for that and keep abreast of all the things that we've got going on.
So what's your website?
The10thmuse.com. And it's hyphenated, the 10th muse.
Okay. What are you working on? What's next?
A lot of things actually are going on right now. Like I said, being in the middle of a poem a day for April, that's always something where not every poem that I'm going to do in 30 poems in 30 days is going to be great, but that's going to be sort of working material for what's going to be for the next several months, right? So I'll take some of those pieces and finesse them. I'll see if there are themes that emerge that might be a potential collection. So this is really planting season, like it is outside, it's planting season for poems. I'm also in the middle of doing pre-sales for Dissections, which is the collection coming out this summer, and scheduling readings and signings and doing the promotion piece of it, which is a little harder. So that's the not so fun part of what I'm doing, but it's essential. I mean, if you're a writer and you want to get heard, you have to do a lot of the footwork yourself these days, sadly.
I love the title Dissections. What is there a story behind that?
Not a specific story, but because a lot of the poems have medical references, they're not all medically related, although a lot of the language just sprang from my medical background. And I think that language has never left me. So a lot of the themes, a lot of the language carry over into this collection. And the idea of the dissections is taking something apart very carefully and precisely to see what's underneath, which is a pretty good way, I think, to describe the pieces in this collection.
Joanna, thank you for sharing your amazing poetry and your overall wisdom as a writer with us.
It's been wonderful to be here. I really appreciate, Robin, you doing this and inviting me to come join you today. So thank you.